So we're excited to have a couple presenters this evening. And again, let me thank you all for participating. And please remember, this is intended to be a dialogue, an opportunity to interact with your colleagues as well as the source of knowledge here. So let me thank Eric and Adam, and turn the program over to them. They'll be
going. Adam, you want to leave?
Go ahead.
All right. I'm Eric Schoner, I'm the marketing general. Are you familiar with marketing general? I know you are.
Forget you. Get out of here. He's a neighbor.
You are. Anybody else? Okay. Real quick, for those of you who are not, marketing general works with over, at any one time, our footprint's about as large as about 120 or 130 associations at any one time, working with them in a variety of programs that drive both dues and non-dues revenue. We work with associations in regards to membership and marketing. I would say anywhere from 35 to 40 different associations actually running their member acquisition, their communications programs, their conference marketing programs, their engagement strategies, and their retention programs. So I guess that's why I was asked to talk a little bit about value proposition today. But that's what we do. We also offer a wide variety of services that would support this, including market research. We have two PhDs on staff that actually report to me, and I oversee the research division as well as a cadre of copywriters and full production. Full production capabilities. So basically, from strategic planning and researching to actual tactical implementation and analysis, that's what we provide for our clients.
And actually, I may interrupt Eric. MGI, and particularly through Eric, publishes the authoritative benchmarking for membership programs within associations. Your membership marketing benchmark report, is probably referenced on the ASAE site every other day.
Thank you.
In one way or another.
I mean, you just did
another work with the engagement online community.
Yeah, with Hierologic now too. We're putting something out. So
research, you guys are phenomenal.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all for having me. My name is Adam Eckerd. I'm an assistant professor at Virginia Tech in the School of Public and International Affairs. And for those of you who don't know, we're actually located just down the street here on Prince Street, where we have degree programs in public administration. So we have MPAs. The MPA program is there. We have PhD programs, and also urban and regional planning and international affairs. And my department,
a long way from Blacksburg.
Well, we actually have almost as large a presence in my school here as we do in Blacksburg.
Are you kidding?
Oh, wow. Yes.
So that's huge.
Well, in my program. Let me qualify that. We are not engineering.
25,000?
The MBA program out in
Falls Church
has pretty much taken everything from Blacksburg up to
Falls. Is that right?
Yeah. Not quite yet, but that's the plan. Wow. So I provide some
world
information.
Domination.
This is information about the programs that we have here in Alexandria. And we have other programs throughout Northern Virginia, but this is what we have located here in Alexandria. What I'll be talking about, what I do, I teach a couple of things. I primarily teach statistics and data analysis and also evaluation. So I come from a background in knowing data, knowing how to use data, but more importantly for this audience, my previous work experience was as an evaluator for the Better Business Bureau. So I did evaluations for the BBB before I went back to graduate school. And then whenever I was in graduate school, I was intrigued by thinking about what I was doing previously. So
I got to ask, do you know Jan Robb?
No, I don't.
Oh, sorry. She's the executive director from the Arkansas BBB. She's the client. Okay.
I might have been after my time. What I research now is looking at how nonprofits evaluate themselves. I'll throw this out there as the start of the conversation. I am very critical of financial ratios and fundraising expense ratios and all those various sorts of things that Charity Navigator and the Better Business Bureau look at. And I'm curious about how nonprofits evaluate themselves, what sorts of data they look for, how they use that data. What do they use evaluation for? And then how do people looking at those evaluations process them? How do they make sense of what they're reading about what the nonprofit's evaluation reports say? So my approach is to think about evaluation. Typically, when I talk to nonprofits about evaluation, there's a bit of immediate initial defensiveness about what evaluation is. And what I typically will do is talk about evaluation on your terms. So how you create an evaluation where you are designing the evaluation that's appropriate for your organization, rather than relying on a set of procedures that have been prescribed to you by a funder or by some sort of external organization that says this is the way you're supposed to evaluate. Because what nonprofits do, by and large, is so different across the entire spectrum of the sector that it's inherently difficult to have those very simple, easily comparable metrics. So this is about creating the metrics that are right for your organization and thinking about the logic of what you do, why you do it, and then thinking about how that can be measured.
Well, I think it really ought to start with you, because no matter what I would do, if you're going to be looking at evaluating yourself, then it's really coming up and determining what are those metrics, and then what we'll talk about is how do we apply them so that it drives revenue.
Sure, that sounds great. What I'm going to do is I'll go through some ideas to give you kind of a framework for how I think about these things, and then hopefully we can work through a couple of examples. That would be my preference. There's basically three ways to think about evaluation and metrics. I think you can think of this from an organizational level. That is, you can look at the effectiveness in terms of your entire organization. You can look at the effectiveness of particular programs within your organization. Or you can look at the effectiveness from a broader community perspective. How effective is this in the community perspective at achieving what you're tending to do for the community as a nonprofit organization? The problem is all three of these are complex and difficult. It's hard to measure what nonprofits do. Not just because profit is not what we're looking for, but because the outcomes, the things that nonprofits are trying to produce, are often very idiosyncratic to a particular nonprofit organization. And even if they aren't necessarily that idiosyncratic, they're really difficult to measure. How do you measure preventing hunger? What does that mean? And an example I use when I teach nonprofit management to students, one of the first things we'll talk about is I'll bring them to class. We'll say, okay, so how do you measure whether you're preventing hunger? And so we go through some examples, and then they say, well, you know, how many people do you feed? Okay, and then I say, okay, so if I feed a lot of people Pop-Tarts, is that a good thing? Am I a good organization if I'm feeding lots of people Pop-Tarts? And they'll think about that for a minute. It's like, okay, well, you probably don't want to feed people Pop-Tarts. Instead, so I feed them organic foods. How are you going to get the money to feed them organic foods? And we have a discussion talking through, you know, something that seems inherently easy to measure, which is, are you feeding people? Quickly gets complicated when you think through contextually what that actually means. So it's really complex and difficult to figure out what you should measure. Secondly, if you think about organizational effectiveness, it's much more than the sum of the parts of your programs. We're not just talking, you can't just take program evaluations and say, this constitutes our effectiveness as an organization. Your effectiveness as an organization is much broader than that. It's about much more a broad sense of what the goals are intended to accomplish versus the specific outputs that the programs that you implement achieve. And third, with respect to the network community effectiveness level, your impact on the community is basically impossible to distinguish. You can, in some ways, account for the direct effect you've had on the people that you serve, but the actual effect that has had on the broader community is ultimately extremely difficult, if not impossible, to assess. So getting at what your impact is, and this is what I've been increasingly hearing from nonprofits that their donors want to hear, foundations want to hear about impact. Well, practically speaking, impact for most nonprofits is either impossible or next to impossible to measure. So you're either coming up with subpar measurements of what impact is, or hiding behind outputs when what you really want to talk about is impact. these things are all sort of complicated because effectiveness, when we talk about effectiveness more in a community perspective or just in general the way the public views it, it's a matter of comparison. Whenever you think about what evaluation is, if a donor is looking for an organization they want to give money to, they're thinking about comparing a couple of different organizations and deciding which one best meets whatever preference they've lined up for how they want to give. Or even if you're thinking about just your organization, you're comparing how you did this year with last year, how you did this year 5 years ago. It's always this comparative exercise. And that puts you in a position of essentially two things: competing with organizations that you may or may not want to actually be competing with, or using sort of the profit motivation model, which says that you have to be growing bigger every year. Part of the problem here, though, is that bigger isn't necessarily better in the nonprofit sector. It might be for some things, but it's certainly not for everything. And it's really hard to tell when bigger is better or when bigger is a liability. And the third complicating factor here is that there's no universal set of best practices. There are best practices, and we can learn things from other organizations, too. But there's no universal set of things that we can say, if we follow this, then we will be successful. So thinking through what you're trying to accomplish becomes incredibly difficult because you're constantly doing this comparative exercise. You're thinking that you need to be bigger, and you're thinking about using best practices that may or may not actually help your organization. So how do you tell which best practices are going to be helpful? How do you tell what the proper comparison is for when you're doing evaluation? And how do you tell what the right size for the organization is? Because of this, this is where I'm going to do a bit of editorializing based on my research. Because of this complexity, what do we see? We often see evaluation simplified to easy to measure, easy to compare general statistics. Things like the efficiency ratios, like the proportion of your program expenses to total expenses, your overhead ratio. We get these really simple measures that, when you think about it, don't really measure anything of that is really of that much value. Is there any reason for me to think that that an organization that has 75% program expense ratio is worse than your organization with 85% program expense ratio? No, but the 85% looks better. But without knowing the details of what those programs actually do, what they accomplish, and what they mean for the community that they're serving, that program expense ratio is useless. The overhead ratio, similarly. If you know nonprofits, and I'm hearing this from the nonprofits I study, they eschew capacity building. They don't build capacity. They don't invest in technology. They don't invest in all of these things that they need. Why don't they do that? Because if they do that, they're going to have to report a high overhead ratio and they're 990 the next year. And they're worried about what that means. So they feel penalized because there's this measure that exists that, you know, indicates the nonprofit that's not doing things right when that nonprofit may actually be doing things exactly as it should. The good news is it doesn't have to be that way. The bad news is I don't think a lot of people recognize that yet. But there are steps that can be taken in thinking about this, and one of the best things to do is recognize the utility of evaluation, the utility of data analysis for your organization, for a couple of different things: to improve the performance, to fully recognize what you're doing well, what you're not doing well, and improve your performance. Secondly, to learn more about the organization. One of the things I consistently talk about with my students is that the process of evaluation is useful strictly because of the process of evaluation. You learn things about your organization. You learn things about why you're doing the things you're doing, and that might ultimately change what you're doing. And then finally, evaluation is a tool for an organization to convey what you do to others. Evaluation needs to be a marketing tool, and it needs to be thought of that way. So what I'll kind of talk about and what I hope we can walk through is getting out of this mindset of thinking of evaluation as comparative and thinking more in terms of evaluation as a specific to an organization. So stepping through thinking about who your organizational stakeholders are. Who is it that you're trying to serve? Who is it that you represent? What's the community context in which you're operating, and how does the context of that community affect what you do and affect what you can do? And then finally, and I think most importantly, thinking through specifically what the organization's change theory is. What is the theory that you have that says we exist for this purpose to achieve these goals? And breaking that theory apart into inputs, outputs, and outcomes. And whenever you break it apart and think through it systematically like that, getting at that outcome that is the measurement that properly measures what your organization is trying to achieve. So that's basically the overview that I think about in terms of evaluation.
So I think that there's enough association folks here to see how this is all going to tie together. At least from where I'm sitting, when you talk about a value proposition, you talk about effectively communicating what it is that you as an association or a nonprofit are bringing to the table. You need to first and foremost, I'm going to put my eyes on, hold on. You need to first and foremost take it from the perspective of your prospect. All right. And that is, why should I buy from you? What is it that you're bringing to the table for me today? All right. So in the case of what we're talking about here,
Adam.
Thank you, Adam.
Sorry.
Adam, in creating the value proposition and understanding what your prospects want, we need to first figure out what are those metrics that they're looking to hold on to. What is it about your nonprofit or about your membership offer that will make my life better? Because that's ultimately what they're looking to do. No, we can say that it's all about the elephants, or we can say it's all about this, but really, at the end of the day, it's about how I feel about the elephants. It's about how I feel about wanting to have a decent work day, so I don't want to spend 18 hours at the office. I'd rather only spend 16 and a half. So, in that way, you become relevant to your prospect, or you become relevant to your member, or you become relevant to your donor, and that is key. That is key. So, in regards, I'm disappearing here. Going back to what you were commenting on, the process of looking at your market and what is the perceived outcome, being able to say to these people, well, we do this, which is why you should be part of us. Asking those prospects, asking those members, asking those individuals, first and foremost, what are you looking for? What is it that's going to put the cherry on top of your sundae? And asking that, and as you will know, a variety of different ways to make sure that they're not telling a fib. And then being able to figure out, okay, fine. Now, how do I do that? If I'm going to say I can do that, if I'm going to make all these promises, which is ultimately really what your value proposition is, it's that promise. Then you also need to understand how you're going to make good on that promise. What is it that you are going to then say, well, fine, if we need to provide dietary sustenance to underprivileged kids in South Boston, all right, well, what does dietary mean? What does sustenance mean? And you're describing South Boston. How far? What street? What zip code? Because we've got to be very clear about what we're offering. All right? So, and more important, and as important as all of that is, and we can speak in these terms because we're association geeks and we're nonprofit geeks, we got to be clear about it. We got to be very, it's got to be easy to understand. It's got to be in a bite size that in 5 seconds somebody can gobble it up and go, oh, I get it! Wow, it's exactly what I need to be doing. So it can't have hype. It can't have verbiage that your market doesn't understand. It's got to be readable in about 5 seconds, and it's also got to be concrete as to what it's going to deliver.
this is my promise, I will provide dietary sustenance to the kids in South Boston. That's what we do. All right, and that, and then you may go on and say in your value prop and how to communicate that, we do that by running a morning breakfast program for the kids of such and such elementary school, and we also run an afternoon daycare program for such and such. Those are then the features that go into proving your program. And we know that those are the features that we should be doing because our research is telling us we really do want to see dietary programs for kids in elementary school and middle school. Probably they should be afternoon programs and breakfast programs. So, so that basically runs through how to set up the value proposition. We're taking our research, we're identifying those key deliverables that are essential to our prospective market and our current market, and saying, okay, fine. I'm going to break that down so that I can convey in 5 seconds what we are going to deliver. And then that also needs to be added in. Something else needs to be added in, and that is why you should be doing it with us and not your competitor. I like your aspect of not comparing yourself to competitors. Now, even though we produce a benchmarking report, I will always have...
we answered a question today. What's the average renewal rate? I wanted to blow my brains out.
With what? Trade? Individual member? Those that have got a combination? Are we looking at education associations? Are we looking at engineering firms? How about doctors? It really comes down to looking at your own data and saying, well, when have you really done well and when have you really been bad? And we don't want to do the bad anymore. We want to do more of the good. And understanding what that means. Now, because too many people run somebody else's race, and I don't know how many of you ran track or I'm a sailor, you never sail somebody else's boat. You never sail somebody else's race. You sail your own race. Because I am not in that person's boat. I'm in my boat, and I know what my wind is doing, and I know what I've got to do to win. So, a good example of some value propositions might be like this. Geekdom, and Geekdom, this is their value proposition for Geekdom. Geekdom is a new kind of collaborative workspace where entrepreneurs, technologists, developers, makers, and creators help each other build businesses and other cool things together. I'd invest in that right away. I think that's really, really clear. Another one, for APSP, this is Pool and Spa Association. Leveraging the collective talent, energy, and expertise of our diverse membership delivers the representation, resources, knowledge, connections, and education to enable its members to be stronger, smarter, and therefore more successful and thrive. What's the outcome? We're going to make you rich. Right? How are we going to do it? We're going to do it by being a representative in Washington, by providing you with the resources and the knowledge and the connections and the education to make you smarter, to make you better, to make you rich. Because that's a trade association. Does this make sense? Am I getting... All right. So the way we work with each other now is saying, okay, fine. We did a bunch of research in the beginning, understood what our prospects want, understand. We built this message, this value proposition that now becomes our guiding light and also tells us what we need to measure. So if we were to go back to Geekdom, we would want to look at are entrepreneurs still using us? Are technologists? And perhaps now it's going to be college students. Okay, that's a new variable. So we probably have to modify this value proposition down the road to include college students. That's interesting because it could open up a whole new market. One market for here would be also at home schooling. What's the word? Help me.
Homeschooling?
Thank you! There it is. $5. Homeschooling. Because I have a friend of mine, Tony Russell, a very good friend of mine, a tremendous amount of my success to Tony. He homeschools, or he homeschooled. His kids are brilliant. His kids are brilliant. And he would tell me about all these great programs they're doing and competitions his kids are involved with and working on teams with kids in Sweden and Switzerland and Germany because they're all working together in a collaborative online environment against, say, another team that was from Canada and blah, 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 blah. Very cool. Well, Geekdom would be, that might be actually a pretty neat market for Geekdom. Or you can be as simple as Stripe. And Stripe Stripe makes it easy to start accepting credit cards on the web today. It's just simply a little software program that they use credit cards. Very simple. Very quick. Bang, what's the benefit? Except I can do it. I can accept credit cards. Not tomorrow. Not next week. Now. So if I'm an entrepreneur and I'm looking at trying to go to a conference or a fair and I've got my table set up, I better call Stripe because I can use it right away. Okay. In regards to our associations, you need to take a look or in regards to the value proposition for your donation, targeting your donors. It's the same thing. You can today have an impact on helping the elephants or the zebras or the kids in South Boston. Okay, that's where I am. And then all the research, of course, has to go back and support all of that. Okay. Any comments? I mean, yeah.
Well, I think when I hear the value propositions, the pool and the spas, relative to, was it Stripe?
Mm-hmm.
I hear the pools and the spas seem to me like it took them a while to get to make you successful.
Mm-hmm.
And in that value proposition, are you finding that?
That's a good point.
Isn't that a little bit too long?
I agree. I think it is. Now comes the reality of the situation, and I help write many of a couple of these. But the reality of the situation is now we've got an executive director who's trying to show himself off to his board. So, when you are putting this together, you end up working with, even though the data may say one thing, you need to find out also internally, how close can you get to that? If you're not in a position of authority, how close can you get, can you get them to that? And you're right, that kind of meanders to where it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it'll get cut down. It'll get cut back later. It will. Mm-hmm. It's just a process. I guess that's where we are. Any comments? I mean, yeah.
Bill and I are your next door neighbors at the Small Business Development Center and the Economic Development Partnership. We're building right next to you the Veterans Business Enterprise Center.
Oh, that's fantastic.
This is a program that's geared towards helping transitioning veterans and their spouses, and the thousands of them that are coming out of the service, transition. There are thousands and thousands of programs geared towards veterans that have come through the government, come all over the place, and the guy gets out, he doesn't know which end is up. He goes through governmental things, but we're trying to create something that's got the human connection, the networking. We're building an incubator or accelerator for a cohort of classes to come through. But we're also going to have some co-working space, and we've got all the training programs and workshops that Bill's folks put on and that we put on for this whole thing. But we're
That's
still
awesome.
We're launching this, and we're trying to develop a clear value proposition of what this is,
mm-hmm.
and also what our metrics are. But we've got the metrics, we think. But we still don't. Our value proposition shifts
right
every daily. So we want to come over and see. Why don't you come over and see what we're
doing? That's fine. We'd love to do it. It'd be fun. Yeah, we can do that.
But this is helpful to, I think, to Bill and I to frame this in the right context.
I'm happy to do that. The if I well, let me move Mind if I keep talking?
No, go.
Oh, okay, good. Hope you guys don't mind. So here we are. If we were to sit down and say, okay, fine, I want to put together this value proposition, or I want to get this communications platform created, because that's ultimately where you're going. We're part of what we need to do is also think about what are the channels through which you're going to be marketing your materials, because each of them have got physical or real estate constraints, right? There's only so much they can go on a sheet of paper if you use direct mail. There's only so much they can go into an ad. If you're going to use advertising, space advertising, there's only so much they can go into an email, right? Which is all the more reason why you want to make your value proposition as concise and as hard-hitting as you possibly can. So, what we first want to do is we want to take a look at what your attributes are. If you were to sit down and take a look at, and you basically have got, if you've been around for a little while, then you've got your legacy attribute, and then you also got to be what you want to be when you grow up, right? When I get out of college, I want to do this, but right now I'm 5 years old. So, your legacy attribute may be old school. Well, the new one may be visionary. All right, so you want to take a look. Now, typically, we would go to our researchers and ask them to find out what are the terms that people are using to describe us. Right? And we would probably then take, depending upon what you're doing, is you take a look at your market by any number of different variables, whether it be age, sex, income level, years in the business. It's endless. And then take a look at, you know, what's the correlation and how can we take this and make it there. Ultimately, you want to find the cornerstones about that basically describe or a descriptor of your group. You know, or not of your group, but of what your group can do. So, in the case of APSP, is what we're looking at leadership, innovation, performance, and professionalism. And taking the and breaking these descriptors down into, let's say, for leadership, we're looking at the words like commanding, strong, confident, unified, collegial, protective. For innovation, problem-solving, bold, visionary. Performance, these are valuable, responsive, powerful, adaptable. These are the words you're going to use to help convey what your association is all about later on in your copy. So I'm looking at this. Professionalism, integrity, knowledgeable. And then we use all of that to help us ultimately build the value proposition and create our position. And then we do look at the platform components. And those platform components are basically who you are. One, a burning problem, you know, in this case, economic downturn, technology change, a heightened regulatory environment, climactic, and other sustainability concerns and globalization have created a difficult and distressed climate for all facets of the pool and spa industry. Now, more than ever, members need the legislative advocacy, professional development, public outreach, and consumer research to help them adapt to change and grow their businesses. APSP is not currently perceived as an indispensable partner, but we want to be. All right? The unique opportunity, APSP is uniquely positioned to partner with current and prospective members to make them stronger and more successful in their businesses. So you want to outline who you are, what is the burning problem? What's the unique opportunity? Okay. And then there's something referred to as the so what. If somebody goes, so what? Our members are more successful. They are more skilled, more competitive, better trained. And together are the most powerful voice in shaping a favorable legislative or regulatory environment in which to do business. We're the best. And then the call to action, join or donate. We save more elephants, more times, in more ways than anybody else. So why would you bloody spend your money anywhere else? That's all based on what that guy does.
Well, and what I would add to that is that whole list of terms that you came up with there. So what my role there would be is to say to an organization, okay, so you've got all these terms, now measure them.
Right. Exactly.
So tell me how you're going to measure leadership, how you're going to measure professionalism, how you're going to take these abstract terms
and make them concrete.
Make them concrete.
So that somebody can say, I believe you.
Right.
Here's my check.
Because to finish those claims at the end that we're the best, mm-hmm. you know, the proper question for the donor or the prospective member to ask is, what's your evidence?
Well, and that then brings you into developing what we would call the anchor messages. Now, this goes to your platform. So you've got your core message, you've got your value message. The anchor message is when, remember we talked about all those terms and getting into what you deliver? Well, your anchor message is, APSB measures success by the success of our members. So, a measure would be, well, last year they earned $5 million, this year they earned $6 million. Guess what? We help with that. APSB fights to protect members and consumers to ensure a healthy climate for business and safe and enjoyable pools, hot tubs, and spas. Okay, they protect their members and consumers. So they have consumer programs that educate. That's the proof in the pudding. They also have got other programs where they protect their members from bad legislation. Well, go ahead.
I know, Adam, you said you had some case studies maybe
yes.
that could give us a chance to kind of take the conceptual piece and put it into
sure.
practice.
Sure, absolutely. We can do that. I'll give two real quick examples. One nonprofit, one association. So I like the nonprofit one because it does a good job of pointing to the vagaries of what nonprofits are trying to accomplish. So during I had a session where it was basically a training session on evaluation with nonprofits. And what we did is we created logic models. We stepped through the process of creating the logic model. And the most common thing I heard, you know, when I said, you know, what are your outcomes? What are you trying to achieve? The most common thing I would hear is, well, we can't quantify that. And the correct answer there is, well, you can, and you're going to have to. So working through with organizations about how to take something that seems inherently unquantifiable and thinking about how to quantify it is a difficult task. So a good example is I was working with the Columbus, Ohio Symphony Orchestra. And they were stepping through, you know, thinking through what are they trying to accomplish. And they kept telling me, you know, what are we trying to accomplish? They'd say, we're trying to put on shows, we're trying to sell tickets. And I would say, well, but that's not what you're trying to accomplish. What's your goal? What's your mission as an organization? Then go back to the sort of the vague mission statement that says, you know, expanding appreciation for classical and music and things like that. And say, okay, well, that's what you're trying to accomplish. Your theory of change is that by holding events, you're going to increase appreciation. And so then when they thought about that, they recognized that in measuring things, of course they're measuring ticket sales, they're measuring repeat customers and things like that. But in thinking through that, they realized that those are outputs. That's not getting at whether their theory of change is actually effective. It's getting at whether their outputs are keeping the organization afloat.
Right.
But that's different. So what I did with them is we worked through, and I actually don't know what they ended up doing, because we worked through a whole different set of things and just tried to tell them, okay, take a step back. Stop thinking about ticket sales. Ticket sales are important. I understand that. That's your revenue stream too. But let's talk about that broader question. You want to increase awareness, appreciation for classical music. How can you get at that? And so we basically just had a powwow, and we threw out a couple of ideas. One of my favorites was they came up with this. They said, well, what if we look at local store? This was a few years ago before everything was online. They said, what if we go to local stores And we look a day or two after shows and we see if they're selling more classical music than they normally do. And
that's
it's very much along the right lines. It's thinking much more about how we can say what happened at the show. If somebody attended the show, what happened at the show? Mm-hmm. And then a second idea was, and this is a very common one that I get with organizations, is to get information from the people who are attending and send them surveys and ask them what they appreciated about the show, what they learned at the show, how they're going to react in the future to this sort of classical music and information. And then we got into a discussion of one of the challenges that I think sort of gets back to sort of one of the things you were talking about, which is, so we talked in talking about the survey, and they were ultimately going to lean on doing a survey because part of the difficulty with the tracking record sales is that, you know, how much of the increase or decrease in sales of classical music can be attributed to what the Columbus Symphony Orchestra did. Who knows? And that's part of the problem when I say, you know, measuring impact. You don't have the ability to do the sort of controlled experiment you would need to know if that was working. So we ultimately said that that's a great idea, but it's not probably actually a good measure of what you're doing. So they were going to do some surveys, and one of the things I cautioned them on is, you know, what's going to happen when they collect information from the people who attend their shows? What's going to happen when they send out the surveys? Who's going to respond to the surveys? The ones who liked the show.
The ones who hated it.
But the ones who go there regularly, the ones who have some sort of investment in it, regardless of whether that investment is love or hate, they're going to be the ones that respond. That doesn't give you a full picture of what you're doing. It gives you maybe an idea, in most surveys, it gives you an idea of what you're doing well. It's going to say, we're serving this set of clients really well in these ways. But it's not going to tell you very much about the set of clients or prospective clients that you're not serving well. And ultimately, that might be the most important for learning about what the organization is trying to accomplish.
And just in light of that, many of my clients will say, oh, great, no problem. If we need to do a qualitative, you know, some kind of board, focus group, oh, no problem. We've got a conference coming up, and we're going to have lots of members there. And we'll have our focus group there. And you look at them and go, yeah, but those are all the people who like you.
Yeah. Yep. I've had that same conversation too. Well, what if we have a survey of people at the conference?
Right.
And I always say you can learn a lot from the people who like you.
Right.
But you can also learn a lot from the people who left, who used to like you and don't like you anymore.
That's
and thinking through that audience that, yes, you want to know about the audience you're serving well, but it's more imperative probably to know about the audience you're not serving well. Right. Or the audience you're not serving and then you should be serving. You know, thinking through that outcome, not the output. The output's the day-to-day. It's really easy for organizations to get focused on that output because that's what you do every day. That's what you produce. You can measure it. You understand what it is.
And but it's within your works. I mean, it's just part
it's
of
there. It's what
it's
you
there.
Do.
Blow through it. And it's easy.
But what gives the organization value is what the product of that is. What does the production, what does the outputs that you produce, what does that actually do for society, for
and
your
more
clients? For
right, but even more importantly, is it doing what you promised you?
Is it meeting those vague terms?
Right.
That you have
are
to
you
find
talking
is,
the talk and walking the walk, or are you just, you know, scamming me?
Let me give a second example because it's an association one that's relevant. So this was also in Columbus, Ohio. I went to Ohio State, in case you didn't figure out. So this was also in Columbus, and I was working with an association of the state association of veterinary doctors, and they were basically trying to put together a plan, you know. So, you know, what do? They were, again, looking at outputs. What do they measure? Well, they measure, and these were actually some of the things they measured. They measured how many meetings they were invited to, how many people attended the meetings that they attended, who they interacted with. So they're measuring all these things, you know, legislation affected. the problem with that is those are output oriented. And when you think about the outcomes that the association's trying to achieve, well, what they're trying to do is represent veterinary doctors in state government. What's the measurement of that? How are you going to know if the time you're putting in is worthwhile? Because the time you put in today may not bear fruit until 5 years from now. So when you break it up and you're starting to measure, you're measuring these things like legislation influence that arbitrary cutoff like 1 year.
Right.
You're not getting the full picture of the resources you're expending and what you're achieving. So we took a step back and tried to think through, okay, so what are they trying to achieve? Well, they're trying to achieve representation for their members. So ultimately what that goes to is making sure that veterinary doctors in the state of Ohio thought that things were getting better for them and how the environment was in which they were doing their jobs. And regardless of whether they were passing legislation, regardless of who they were meeting with, that didn't matter. What mattered is the perception of the veterinary doctors that things were better for them. So they started doing a survey, and what they found is that, you know, all of I've actually talked with them in the succeeding years, and what they've done is they've started learning that there's essentially no correlation whatsoever between what they were measuring before and the level of satisfaction that the doctors have. The satisfaction, you know, they haven't really figured out necessarily what satisfaction is driven by. But in part, it's driven by their ability to communicate well with their members. Just talk to them, let them know what's going on and how it's going to affect them.
Right.
So that they can then take that information and make sure that it's conveyed to appropriate stakeholders.
This gets us into, we changed our survey methodology about 5 years ago, where we went from satisfaction, asking a person, well, are you satisfied with your membership, to what we would refer to as a gap analysis. What does success look like to you, Mr. Member, and how well are we delivering on that? And you get to a 5-point scale. Well, networking is 4. That's one of the reasons I joined. But I'm going to rank it right now as a 2. Well, you got a problem. All right. And again, it's a much bigger. I mean, you got to take a look at the overall survey. And you got to take a look at.
Back to the Ohio. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. But to your point is that they're probably now thinking, okay, well, we got to find out why they're joining, and then asking, how are we doing on that?
Right. Exactly.
I thought this was an interesting point you made, that the change for them was in how they market it. It was more of a communications shift.
Well,
that's kind of
what they found was working.
The general sense of well-being or sense of prosperity or optimism was the thing they were trying to measure.
Yep.
And the best lever to push that was better communications.
Having people feel like they were part of the community.
Did they change the way they talked about public policy? Because oftentimes we talk about public policy as this looming threat, this thing that only we are standing between you and certain defeat and crushing hands of government.
What they did is it's kind of interesting. I don't actually know if they changed. I can't answer that. I'm not sure. But I do know that one of the things that they decided to do differently is they dramatically shifted their focus less towards the legislature and more towards the regulatory agencies, and focusing on networking and interacting with the regulatory agencies in the state much more so than with the legislative branch, because the regulatory arms, that's what the vets were interacting with, not the legislators. So, you know, I'm obligated to say this because I'm a professor of public administration and not a professor of political science. More work gets done in the bureaucracy than gets done in the legislature. So it made sense for them, given that what they were dealing with, which is regulatory, to work with the regulators, not with the legislators.
It's harder for a blunt communications person to talk about opening dialogue with regulators as opposed to killing a bill.
Right.
But So your perception is that a more sophisticated message about their advocacy efforts led to better feelings about their work overall by the membership?
Maybe, maybe not. I don't know if I would go that far. I would say there was at least a perception that the organization was attempting to help in a way that the membership perceived would be helpful, if that makes sense.
And I think in our experience within healthcare, we've seen that it is definitely, in terms of the day-to-day operations of our provider members, it's the killing a bill is the sexy thing that everybody likes to. You know, they would rather go and spend a day on the Hill talking to aides or maybe a representative, but it is that when they get home and they have to file with Medicare or they're trying to implement a new Medicare reg, it's the Medicare compliance and regulatory compliance and advice, that's through our research, right. That's what's valuable to them. That's what... how do I stay in business effectively? How do I run my business?
But, I mean, you can talk about economic development here. I mean, BRE creates more jobs probably for almost every community than attraction efforts, more or less. It's easier to talk about whale hunting, and it's also easier to talk about gazelle companies. But, you know, growing mid-sized companies are really hard. It's a really hard... So it's a hard communications problem.
Yeah, I'm actually, interestingly enough, working with Arlington County right now on a project on that very topic. So, okay. and how they're measuring and trying to figure out what they're trying to accomplish in economic development. Mm-hmm. They're kind of tired of chasing after white whales.
Well, they've landed a number of them.
They have, but it's a race to the bottom is their concern. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We chase the same white whales.
Well, we thank you, gentlemen, very much for leading our discussion. If you have questions, feel free to grab them while we're sharing a glass of wine. I know Adam is heading out quickly. He gets a chance to speak soon to some students.
I will be speaking to students in about 45 minutes.
Yes. Okay. Your time with him is very limited. But again, let me thank you guys very much for participating. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you.